This episode is supported by Active Skin Repair. Active Skin Repair is a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. I just randomly, Vinny was having a toe skin irritation issue, and he ended up having this like skin that was really irritating him, and it was getting kind of like icky, and you know, like when kids start to get like little scabs and scratches and then they want to pick at it, and it was getting worse. And so Active Skin Repair showed up on my doorstep as a result of the sponsorship, and I got to put it to use immediately. And I got the ointment formula, or the like ointment formulation, and then also the spray, and the spray was perfect. So Vinny does not like ointmenty, creamy, lotiony things on his body, but I was able to get out the spray, literally took it out of the packaging the day it arrived, put it on his toe before he went to bed. And the next morning he was like, "Mom, my toe's all better." It was literally like this super amazing cure that helped his toes so quickly. So you can use Active Skin Repair on a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, other types of skin damage. It's totally safe, non-toxic, suitable on all types of skin, even parts of the body where you might have rosacea or eczema or have acne-prone skin. This is also safe for the youngest members of your family up to the oldest. So now you have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. With over 500,000 happy customers and thousands of five-star reviews and super safe and clean ingredients, Active Skin Repair is something that you want to have on hand for your family. So to get your own Active Skin Repair, go to activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order when you use the code SHAMELESS. That's activeskinrepair.com. Use the code SHAMELESS for 20% off your order. activeskinrepair.com, code SHAMELESS. This is the Shameless Mom Academy, episode 388 with Farnoosh Torabi. Show notes for this episode, including any links mentioned in the episode, as well as any discount codes from our sponsors, can be found by going to shamelessmom.com and clicking on episode 388. Welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm your host, Sarah Dean. I'm here to give you and other passionate, driven, unapologetic moms tools, resources, and a little bit of humor to help you lead more positive, powerful, and purposeful lives every damn day. One of the best things about the Shameless Mom Academy is our community, so be sure to join us in our free private Facebook group to connect with other shameless moms just like you. You can find us over at shamelessmom.com/Facebook. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Farnoosh Torabi is a shameless mom of two littles, a celebrated financial expert, host of the award-winning podcast So Money, and best-selling author of multiple books, including her latest, When She Makes More. She appears frequently on the NBC Today Show and is the resident financial contributor for O, the Oprah magazine. She is also part of the founding team of Stacks House, the first ever pop-up museum dedicated to financial literacy and empowerment. Farnoosh studied finance at Penn State and holds a master's from the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism. She lives in Brooklyn with her husband and her two children. I was on Farnoosh's podcast, So Money, a couple months ago, and I have been so excited to have her come join me here. We've actually developed this really fun connection and little like online friendship. I'll just call it what it is. It's an online crush for me, okay? I don't know if she knows this, but it's a full-on online crush. So I have an online crush on Farnoosh Torabi for sure. We had just two really great conversations between me being on her episode of So Money and then having her on my show. So now we're BFFs. So if you haven't listened to my episode on So Money, that's linked up in the show notes, and that might be a fun follow-up interview for you to listen to. Today on the Shameless Mom Academy, listen in to hear Farnoosh share her relationship with money, having grown up in an immigrant family that had to build financial security, how to talk to your kids about money in the context of your family values, the importance of teaching your kids delayed gratification with money, when to have your kids open bank accounts, why she is owning being the purposeful breadwinner in her marriage after previously claiming it was accidental, the global implications when women make more money, and how she made more money after having kids. This is a fun conversation. Actually, we start this conversation off with some drama. So you're going to want to tune in for this. There was a little drama after I was on Farnoosh's show, and you might enjoy being a fly on the wall for the conversation that ensues post my so money drama conversation. So you're going to learn a lot from this. You're going to get to be on a fly on the wall for some fun kind of back end stuff that happens when two podcasters get caught in a little bit of scandal on social media, because this happens from time to time. And you're going to, I know, have some really great takeaways that are going to stretch your current mindset around money and also give you some really great tips for practical application in terms of how you can look at wealth building, being financially responsible, and how you can really embrace making money as a woman and the power that comes with that. So with all that said, I'm so excited, so honored to be introducing you to my friend, my crush, Farnoosh Torabi. Farnoosh, welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm so excited and honored to have you here today.
Sarah Dean, this is my dream come true. I mean, you're doing important work, and I cannot wait to have more conversations with you about all things parenthood.
I'm mine too.
Little bit.
Yes, yes. So I always kick off this conversation asking people to dive into the dynamics of their personal and professional life and what's most exciting right now. And so I'm going to ask you that question. But what's funny is I think that one of the directions you might want to take this is the way we started our conversation in the pre-interview around you and I are like caught up in a controversy right now. So yeah, tell us what's going on, all the exciting things in your life.
I mean, you're just so full of drama, Sarah, and I love it. I love it. Everywhere you go, debate ensues. So Just to give your listeners some background, you know, you were on my podcast, So Money, earlier in August, I believe. And everybody should go check that episode out with the Shameless Mom Academy, Sarah Dean. And we touched a real nerve when we started to talk about stay-at-home parenting and the financial ramifications for that stay-at-home parent. It's not a secret that I am very vocal and adamant about stay-at-home parents working as best they can to secure their own income. I know it's not always realistic or possible, but to always be thinking about that and eventually, you know, doing a side hustle, finding a part-time job, or at least thinking about their re-entry into the workplace. It's so critical to their financial solvency. And too often, you know, anecdotally and statistically, we hear about when there is a breakup, a divorce, the individual in the relationship that didn't have their own bank account, right, or their own savings was financially obliterated, right? You have to afford a divorce. You have to afford the interim before the settlement, all the things. And right. And so there's a lot on the line. And I think, you know, I definitely know that I made some people unhappy with my points of view. You agree, I think, with this?
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the points that you made, because there's the whole situation around divorce, which of course I think a lot of people think, well, that will just never happen to me.
Right.
But there's this other component that when you don't have financial autonomy, the level of stuckness that can be so depleting and create such a lot, I mean, a loss of financial autonomy, but like a loss of your own personal autonomy as well. And so I think there's that component too, where it's not just like I should always be preparing for divorce, but I should always be staying in a situation because, not because I'm trapped in it, but because I want to be in it.
Right. Thank you for bringing that up. So, right, the divorce aspect is just one scenario. There's scenarios where you just want to have your own financial independence because that is a source of pride and fulfillment for you, which then, you know, you bring back into your relationship. It allows you to go out in the world and, you know, take more risks, have more options, good and bad. And so for all these reasons, for years now, I've been talking about why this is so important. And it kind of came about around the time when I published my last book called When She Makes More, which is a book for helping couples where the wife is the breadwinner, which is a growing trend in our country, but it's still something that we don't have a language around. People are uncomfortable with it because gender roles, you know, we still are very strict sometimes when it comes to gender roles and expectations in a relationship. We don't necessarily think of women as being breadwinners, and that can be a really complex thing to navigate if you find yourself in a relationship with that paradigm. But anyway, we had this reviewer who went on iTunes and gave me one star just because of this one comment. And I love it. I love it. I love it. I love the debate. And the debate continues. I've now put posted on Instagram and people are weighing in and most people are in favor, but then there are some people who are raising critical viewpoints on this and thinking, I wasn't very nice, but just think I was nice. I think I was very straightforward. This is a serious topic.
Yeah, it's so funny because when I was reading the review and the reviewer were talking about you being so judgy, and I'm like, I was there for that conversation. I don't remember. But I think when things tie to money, we all have an emotional connection to money. And so if it's a point of insecurity or someone has a history with money that is, you know, maybe tinged in a certain way, that might have come across as judgy to them. That was not my perception of the conversation. So it's interesting that people have different takes on the same thing.
Right. I think that whenever you say something that is unpopular, even if you say it with a smile, people are just willing to hear that and it will be interpreted mm-hmm. as you were mean or just insensitive.
Right.
So yeah, thanks for starting us out here on your podcast with such brouhaha, but here we are.
Totally. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. One of the things that I get with that whenever anyone thinks if I say something controversial that someone might perceive to be judgy, then the comment that I get from people is, oh, look at the shameless mom shaming other people.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, I can have an opinion without shaming someone. Or my other thing is I can hold someone accountable without shaming them. And there's a difference between that. And I think that women often think that when you hold someone accountable or you have a strong opinion, that that's shaming. And that's it's totally different. So interesting conversation for sure. And I actually think that, you know, one of the things that I know for me is very true is that my relationship with money started off in scarcity and with parents who didn't have a lot, with parents who divorced when I was very young, with a mom who was very, very financially conscientious. So that's what I was raised in. And so I had worry around money because I watched my mom have worry around money. And because of that, I've always been a saver. And I don't know if hoarder's the right word, maybe a hider more than a hoarder, but I hide money. And it was actually a joke in college. My roommates in college used to give me a hard time because I had roommates who'd be like, I only have, you know, $2.37 to last me till I get my next work study check. And I would be like, oh yeah, me too. Cause I would always be running low before I was going to get paid. But then they would say, yeah, but the difference between the two of us, Sarah, is that you also have like a hidden savings account that has $300 in it. Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, but that doesn't count because I don't ever touch that. So when you talk about having financial autonomy, regardless of whether or not you are making money working for outside the home or making money working at home, I am absolutely of the belief that like you should have a backup plan because I was raised that way. And I was raised with a mom who needed that too. I mean, my dad walked out and there she was with two little kids working full time, kids in childcare. Like, so it's interesting. So I'm curious from your perspective, I know you've built this entire career around money, money mindset, financial security. And I'm wondering what your relationship was like with money early on and how that informed your career.
Well, I'm the daughter of immigrants from Iran, and they came here with very, very little and over the years really built up their lives and were able to provide for me and my brother and all of us in a way that was truly remarkable. And I think growing up with that in that household, it's inevitable. You leave with a sense of almost like duty to not F up, you know, like I can't screw up with my money because my parents who came here with very little, barely spoke English, probably had to navigate a lot of different kinds of discrimination over the years. Despite all of that, they were able to save, they were able to stay out of credit card debt, they were able to build wealth. And so what's my excuse, right? I'm the offspring of that. Born into far more resources than they had, far more privileges. And then, of course, the guidance and nurturing of two adult people. So I sort of feel like I don't have permission. I don't give myself permission to really screw up. And of course I do, but I think that I'm always very conscious as a result of trying to make healthy choices with my money. And I think that's also a byproduct of doing the work that I do. You know, it's like, I can't be that. Can you imagine if I was broke? Like, and I, and I'm like a financial author and giving people financial advice.
That is an interesting, I hadn't even thought of that. If you're someone who teaches this, you're like, well, I guess I have to always stay rich.
Maybe not so much like, quote unquote rich, like balling, but like I have to at least feel like secure, right, in my financial life that I've created for myself, and that I have security.
Totally.
It's funny, like I'm so conservative with my taxes because I never ever want like to be in a headline that's like Farnoosh Torabi didn't pay her tax. You know what I mean? Like you're actually, you know, I'm not.
Oh my gosh.
Not to say that like I have celebrity status, but like when you do work and if you are a financial expert and an author, like there is more scrutiny, you know, as far as like what you're doing with your money. So I have to just be careful of that. But I think back to what I said earlier about just being raised with hardworking parents who, by the way, also talked about money a lot in the household. So I credit them for growing up not ever feeling financially illiterate or rather even just not having like the language, or I didn't have any fear about talking about money. I thought it was really normal.
And how did they talk about money? Because my mom talked about money all the time, but it was like totally fear-based.
They talked about money in the context of values a lot. So, you know, as the daughter of immigrants who didn't necessarily adopt cultural values here, cultural, you know, rituals. Like I wasn't allowed to like go to away camp. I couldn't like go to big trips with my friends without adults around. I think that they just didn't invest in certain things for me maybe sometimes money was scarce, but it was always about this is not what we do, right? And so that message was really, I think, a healthier one than like, oh, we can't afford it or money's tight. And that, again, may have been the case, but it was also about priorities and values. And so we did spend on different things. And so that was made clear to me from an earlier stage. And I think that helped a lot as an adult trying to navigate my own trade-offs.
Yeah, that's a really interesting context to talk about money with kids. I'm like totally thinking of how I'm going to integrate this into our family conversations with a child who is increasingly aware of money. He's almost 7 years old. Because I love the idea that when you say no about to spending money on something, that you're saying, this is in alignment with our family values. We choose to spend money here and not here. And that's a really valuable conversation and construct to work from.
This episode is supported by AquaTrue. Having clean, safe water is the last thing you want to worry about. But unfortunately, according to extensive research by the Environmental Working Group, 3 out of 4 homes in America have harmful contaminants in their tap water. So that's why you got to check out AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers have a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers, which is what we have, take no installation or plumbing, and they remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. And they're specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS, which can lead to potentially adverse health effects like cancer, endocrine system disruption, and liver toxicity, which is part of what makes AquaTrue so special, unique, and important in terms of how they are able to filter water. They also have water purifiers to fit every type of home. So like the installation-free countertop purifier that we have at our house to higher capacity under sink options. They even have Wi-Fi connected purifiers and mineral boost options. So I'm so excited about our new AquaTrue. And here's the thing. I swear it's like a gentle reminder to actually drink more water every time you walk into your kitchen. So we are drinking more water now, and also more clean water. So more water that is more clean. It feels like a double win. I'm feeling pretty impressed with us. I feel like sink water, tap water becomes invisible at a certain point. And when I see the purifier on my counter, it's like many time a day reminder to like, keep drinking, keep drinking. So I want you to check out AquaTrue for yourself and for your family. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and that makes it a great gift as well. Today, my list listeners can receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter the code SHAMELESS at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use the code SHAMELESS, SHAMELESS, AquaTrue.com, code SHAMELESS. This episode is supported by a podcast I want to share with you called Understood Explains. So this show is about navigating ADHD, dyslexia, and other learning and thinking differences, which can be so confusing. And so every season of the show is around a different theme. So there's a season on special education, there's a season on ADHD diagnosis for adults, and the current season is all about IEPs. I love this podcast because the episodes are 10 to 15 minutes long. So if you are short on time or short on focus, you can take this content in super quickly, easily, It's very digestible, and the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube. So Juliana talks all about how to navigate educational plans, IEPs. She talks about the differences between IEPs and 504 plans. She really breaks things down in a really clear and simple way so that you have some of those questions that you might be thinking around, like, does this pertain to my child? Is this something I need to be looking into? Like, where do we go from here? Where do I go if I have questions? Juliana has you covered. She explains so many different things and so many different little pieces and nuance of IEPs and special education and different things on Understood Explained. So I want you to go check it out wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can go listen to Understood Explains. Just go into your podcast app, do a search for Understood Explains, and it will pop right up. Click on it, pick your episode, and get the answers that you've been looking for and the support that you need around different learning differences and differences in school.
Yeah, no, I think you can start as early as, you know, 3 years old, 4 years old, you know, it just being much more like sort of giving the appearance of like that there's a strategy at play, right? As opposed to you're just reacting to a circumstance like, oh, you know, camp's coming up. Yes. And well, oh, I can't afford that, or I didn't save for that, rather than like, you know, well, we have other things that our family wants to afford, you know, and we didn't prioritize this, to be honest. But if you want to do this next year, let us know. Yeah. So we can work on it, you know, and then like give them hope that there is perhaps a future where this could be part of their summer ritual.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so going to use this. So as someone with an only child, I feel like I need to give my kid all these opportunities for social reasons. I'm like, well, he needs to do all the activities because he needs to like have these social experiences, and they all cost money. It's ridiculous. And so, yeah, even this fall with like three different activities, I'm like, really? And now I'm paying for Lego Club.
And,
yeah. So, but his expectation was like, oh, but I'm doing Lego Club, right? And I didn't even think about, because he didn't get into Lego. Lego Club is a competitive event, by the way, at our school. And so he didn't get in last year. So I was like, our framework around that conversation was like, I'll make sure that I get you registered on the day that it goes live and blah, blah, blah. Like no conversation around, so I'm spending money on this, so the next time you ask for Pokemon cards, the answer will be no for 2 months.
Yeah, it's a give and take, right? It's not about having it all. It's about being selective about what you want. And I love talking about kids and money. I think that it's such an opportunity to really bring forth to them important, you know, lessons that I always ask on my podcast, like talk about a lesson you learned about money growing up. And everybody's got one. People think that it's so hard to teach financial literacy to kids. And yeah, it's impossible to teach a kid about like compound interest at age 7, but you can model really good behavior and have these sort of, you know, go-to responses for the inevitable conversations around, you know, why don't we have a pool, or why can't we go to France for spring break, or, you know, why don't you work? Honest to them is really important.
Right, right. How old are your kids?
So my daughter is 2.5 and my son is 5 and almost 5.5.
And what are the conversations that you're having? I think you've just given us some examples of how you're already talking about money, but what are some specific examples that you're using with those two ages?
Well, with my daughter, it's really more about having an awareness of money. And, you know, for her, it's more like she's seeing money as something that a tool that comes up when you're transacting, like at the grocery store, but she has a piggy bank. And very early on, I taught her how to say money. And that was really cute. I captured that on video. I was like, my work is done, everybody. She's ready for Harvard. My son is definitely he's got the piggy bank, and he knows the importance of appreciating money. Like when he finds money around the house, he knows it's something valuable. He puts it away in the coin jar. We've taken him to one of those Coinstar machines at the grocery store to redeem the pennies and the quarters, and then, you know, using that to go, say, get lunch. And so he's understanding that money is a tool, that money is something that we should save. We also, in the grocery store, you know, when we're navigating through the aisles, he'll always, like, of course, pick up stuff. And I'll say, no, we already have that at home, so we don't need this, like, at this time. And, you know, just, it's important to just explain it, because it's supposed to say, like, no, put that back, because he's understanding that, like, there are needs and wants, and there are limits to what you can afford, right, and what you should have at any given time, right? Like, what's the point of having 5 boxes of gummy bunnies? We have one at home. When that finishes, we'll go back and get some more if that's what we want. Kind of being more patient and delaying gratification, that's actually been proven to be one of the most important things to teach your kids for all of life's survival, but especially when it comes to managing your money wisely, that not giving your kids what they want right away. And it works for adults too, right? You appreciate what you get when you have to work for it, when time goes by. You might even realize that you don't want it, right? That the impulse is really what you're trying to curb, and self-control, self-restraint, all of those skills are incredible life skills for adults, but you can teach that very early on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. So sometimes in parenting, you get so excited to see the look of joy on your child's face that you cave to things that you maybe shouldn't cave to. And my husband recently pointed this out to me when I made a silly indulgent purchase for my son, and it was only $7 and it was on super sale. It was like this stuffed animal thing that was like 80% off. And I surprised him with it when we were camping. I had it like sitting on his pillow and he was super excited. My husband was like, "This is ridiculous. You are so spoiling him." And I was thinking about it. I was like, he's totally right. And so I was like, why did I do that? Cause he really, like, in a summer of indulgence, he did not need a new stuffed animal on the last day of August. But I was like, why did I do that? And I thought, because that's just the best feeling. And so I actually need to check my own delayed gratification to be like, hey, his birthday's in 3 weeks. Like, I could have given him the $7 stuffy for his birthday and he would have given me the same smile.
I know. Well, you're 100% right about that, because most of the time, it's not even about what the kid wants. It's like, we can't control ourselves half the time. You know, I want to give my kids a childhood that's even better than what I had, right, in some ways. And of course, there's also sometimes the guilt that I harbor because maybe I haven't seen them very much during a given week because I was working overtime or what have you, or I came back from a trip and I want to bring them something because they missed me, but they don't care. Yeah. They really don't. I blame my mother for this because she's like that. And it all comes from a good place. You know, it's not because we want to spoil our kids rotten and turn them into jerks. It's really because we just, for us, for whatever reason, there might be a cultural association, a tradition that you want to keep of like, when my mom comes to visit, she always wants to have something in her hands to give them. Because she says she remembers as a kid when her grandmother would come to their house, all the kids would really wait in anticipation and excitement for like, what did Nana bring us, you know? And that's not really great, because you don't want your grandmother or your grandparents to be just valued for the goodies that they bring to the house. But for whatever reason, it is the relationship that she misses wanted to like kind of put it back in play with her own grandkids. And I just let her do it. I've kind of given up on arguing with my mom over the spoiled treatment because, first of all, she lives really far away. She visits only a few times a year. We only get to see her a few times a year. They miss her like crazy. And this is what makes her happy. And it makes them happy too. I don't think she's ruining them, you know, for a few extra toys. And it just saves, you know, the exhaustion of like arguing with her. So I have lost that battle and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I've waved the white flag.
Totally. And I think there's places where you can do that. And that doesn't take away from the other values that we've already covered in terms of how you and your partner and your kids are managing money in the household and, you know, setting examples in those contexts. I think that that still is like the primary goal and the primary.
Right. They see me much more often. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So I want to know when, this is a personal question, when do I make my kid go and open a savings account? He keeps telling me, I'll give you background on this. Every time we drive by a bank, which is, you know, 17 times a day, anytime we're in the car, and he's like, we need to go to the bank so that I can get a credit card soon. And I keep telling him he doesn't get a credit card until he's an adult. But he has this idea in his head that he can go up and open up a bank account and get a credit card and just start buying things. So we've actually had some really great conversations around like what a credit card is and those kinds of things. But I think he is at this age where it could be a great next step to go to a bank and open an account.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of great online accounts too for kids where it serves as both maybe like an allowance tracker and also a savings bank behind the scenes, sort of like a back-end savings account. You can Google them. The names escape me, but there's, if you just kind of look up like kids savings account, the big banks have them, like Capital One's got one, you know, but then they're also these other like niche banks that are just for kids and kind of do the whole like allowance tracking as well. And so it's a real visual opportunity to like sit down with your kid on the laptop to see maybe what is in the bank account. You don't have to get in the car and go there. Although
so modern. I was ready to take him walking down the street. Let's walk a mile to the bank and open an account.
I think there's a lot of value still in doing that. You know, that exercise is something that I know for sure when they get older, they will remember it. I remember when my dad took me to the local credit union when I was probably, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old. I got a savings bond at some point from like the Rotary Club for, I don't know, best hair of the year or something. I don't know like what the award was, but I got something. Oh, I got like some like, you know, it was like the Don't Do Drugs campaign. And I drew a poster and I got like a $100 savings bond from the Rotary Club, which is probably now worth like $89, but it depreciated. But my dad was like, great, we're going to go and deposit this in the bank. And I remember getting a lollipop and sitting in some, you know, big chairs. You know, I've gone to the bank, like to the physical bank outside of an ATM, like maybe 3 times in my, you know, in the last year, just to show you that, you know, you just don't need to go. But it is something that is a moment, and it can be like a teachable moment. You kind of talk, right, you can talk right. a little bit about like how it works and interest and things like that.
Right, right. Okay, I want to switch gears a little bit because I think this is all so valuable. And I think that I want to talk about gender roles and money, which we kind of touched on in the beginning. And then I think we can talk when we dive into that, it actually is going to be also really valuable in terms of what we're modeling to our kids. Yeah. And again, going back to that piece of financial autonomy and how that looks in our families and how our kids are going to see that within our marriages as well. So you wrote a book a few years ago, which you mentioned, She Makes More, in which you publicly declared that you inadvertently became the breadwinner of your family. And I did some internet research, stalking, and I saw a post that you wrote a while back after you wrote the book where you say you admit now that you didn't accidentally become the family breadwinner, as you had earlier stated. So why are you the breadwinner of your family and why is that important to you?
I love that you did some stalking because this is a great place to begin talking about the book. So the book is called When She Makes More. I wrote it and I published it in 2014. Basically because I was the breadwinner in my marriage and I felt like I couldn't really talk about it. It was sort of taboo and it bothered me. I'm a financial expert. I talk about money all the time. I'm not shy about talking about money, yet I'm in this sort of weird place. And I thought, if I'm uncomfortable, and this is my job, right, to talk about money, where does that leave all the other women out there that I absolutely know are secretly making more money than their boyfriends, than their husbands? And I decided to research it. And I, of course, found out that there were so many people like me and not a lot of advice on how to navigate it. And when I first was sort of reflecting on my own situation, I think partly because I didn't want to, again, this is like I was still probably dealing with some of the insecurities that I was having around this. And I probably was interpreting the whole thing as like, well, I didn't mean to be the breadwinner, guys. Don't be upset with me. You know, and I think part of it was also I didn't want to like shame my husband, even though he was totally fine with it. It was just me. I had to still reconcile with some of the emotional baggage that this was creating for me. And it wasn't dishonest. It was just how I was explaining it to myself for whatever reason. And then of course the world. And it is how I also heard this from a lot of other women who I interviewed for the book, like this wasn't the plan. You know, this is just a circumstance of what I do for a living. My career path pays more than my husband's. Don't like people, I think, because there was so much concern over, there was a lashing out a little bit like, oh, who does she think she is making more? And why is she even talking about it? That's so taboo. That's so gauche, you know, like, ew. And we were only talking about it because we felt like we needed to support each other and figure out more solutions, because when she makes more, there's a higher rate for divorce and infidelity and unhappiness in your marriage. And so it was coming from a good place. So then fast forward a couple of years, 3 years, I'm at a book event talking about the book again, still, it's now in paperback, to an audience of women. And the moderator asked, what is the one thing that you've learned about yourself since publishing your book? And I was very honest. And I said, you know what, if we're being really honest, I think that I was put on the planet to be a breadwinner. I don't think that I could have been happier in any other financial paradigm, in any other financial arrangement in a marriage, because this is so true to my core. I didn't, of course, like plan for this. It wasn't like I wrote on my wish list when I was 25, like be a breadwinner, but I worked so hard in my 20s to be financially independent. I grew up in a family where my mom didn't sometimes work, and I saw the impact that had on her happiness, on her sense of security, how it created a lot of uproarious fights in my parents' marriage. They almost divorced. So that all fed me. And I think consciously, subconsciously, I sort of went for this. And when I looked for a partner, when I was dating my then boyfriend, now husband, I was really attracted to the fact that he did not place so much sense of self-worth to his income, to his job titles, that he was so much more the sort of guy that, like, his happiness is completely stemming from his role in the household, his ability to contribute as a father, as a husband. He loves his work and he's passionate about work, but I think I'm more financially ambitious than he is. And that's not a negative. That's just who we are. That's our DNA. That's who we are designed to be. And you can go back into his whole like financial story and history and probably figure that out, figure out why. But here I am. And I think it's not inconsequential, you know, and I'm also really comfortable and happy with it now. I feel like I am myself. Mm-hmm. More than ever. And I, not to say like I wouldn't ever wish for my husband to make tons more money and maybe like win the jackpot. Hey, that would be great. But I really appreciate the role that I'm in. I feel very much like it's who, it's like I kind of rose to the occasion. It's comfortable being as a breadwinner. I know that's not everybody, but so I'm just very unapologetic and very straightforward now when people ask about our situation. I'm like, you know what? I think I really wanted this and I might may have even manifested it.
Yeah. It might just be the company that I keep, but I see just so much like dropping the veil around the taboos with women and money. And I've learned a ton. I know you and I know Rachel Rogers in common. I've learned a ton of, from her about this, and she has a strong belief that every woman should desire to be a millionaire. And I think that for so long, generations, not like a few years, but generations, it wasn't like a good look for women to desire financial
it's
independence
still not.
Or richness or wealth. And I think that, but so when you say it's still not, and I'm like, I think that it's maybe, again, it might be the company that I keep or the people I'm surrounding myself with, because I'm seeing more and more women talking openly about desiring wealth and building wealth and the power that comes with that. And I'm like so here for it. You're in different circles than I am. And you have, because you do a lot of mass media stuff. And so you're seeing like the country as a whole, probably, or society as a whole. And I'm seeing like little pockets of entrepreneurs.
Yes. So, and you're in Seattle. So I think that on the coasts, the girl bosses, you know, the boss moms, we get it. You know, we are all marching to this drum. I think that there's a whole other country in the middle that has more conservative values. I mean, I don't want to get political, but I think sometimes this sort of overlaps a lot of like political views and, you know, why the role of women in a relationship is sometimes dictated by religion. And so it's really complex. I see the whole country. I see that while on the coasts, perhaps there is a more of a progressive view on things, but I think we still have a long way to go. I do love that there's so much more discussion and support around female financial feminism, really, you know, the pursuit of equality for women in all realms, and not to mention money, finances, so important. It's one of my greatest issues and topics, but I think it's going to be a long road, but we got to keep with it. We got to keep momentum.
Yeah. And I would say maybe it's not unlike diet culture, where there's just a lot of indoctrination around these social constructs. And so we grow up seeing things, hearing things, and then believing things without really giving them much consideration, because it's just what we've always been exposed to. And so when now in recent years, as I've been exposed to more and more women who are very financially successful and desire to be even more financially successful than they already are, my indoctrination is different now. Like what I see and what I believe and what I choose to surround myself with is different, because I've had this exposure to something that like I now can't unlearn. I can't go back. And so
I think there's some of that too, that when we are exposed to something new and different, then we're like, oh, wait, I actually had this recently with a client who we were doing a lot of training around leadership, and she kept setting goals around weight loss. And I was like, can we stop? And she finally, so one of her goals, like she came to me after not talking for a few weeks, and she's like, for the first time in my life, I don't have a goal related to weight loss. And I was like, this is like the biggest win of your life, yeah, because there's been this indoctrination that you should always be trying to shrink your body. And so I think that we get so caught up and held back in different areas of our life because we have these just unconscious thoughts around how things should be. And so if you're someone who thinks that your husband should make more, or that you can't have a side savings account because you're not earning your own money, that's an indoctrination thing. Mm-hmm. And there are other ways to look at it.
Social conditioning, baby. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
And it's really primitive. When I was writing the book, I enlisted the help of Dr. Brad Klontz, who is a clinical psychologist. I can never remember I think he's a psychologist, but he's also a financial planner, and his work really intersects psychology and money. And we did a study together on looking at women who make more than their spouses and women who make the same or less, and kind of seeing where their marital happiness lay and where, you know, how busy they were at home and how kind of stressed out they were. And I mean, all the different hypotheses that we had that just it's a lot harder for women who make more proved true. And what he deduced was that, look, we have a society that is, by a lot of measures, very modernized, progressive. You can kind of look at all sorts of different benchmarks. You know, we elected an African-American president. We almost elected a female president. You know, but we're all walking on this planet still with very much these brains that have been primitively hardwired, right? That's billions and billions of years of social conditioning, where the thought has always been that men go out there and they provide the most important resource, which to this day for many families is still money, and women support at home. And when that it gets flipped on its head, it's very strange at first. And not because there's any sort of like discrimination happening, but it's bias. It is built in, and it's a billion year bias, right? So that's what we're really fighting up against. And I think that just the more we talk about it, the more we acknowledge the bias, and we acknowledge like that we may harbor some of these antiquated beliefs around what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a man, what it means to be someone in between. Like there's so many questions now about what is even gender. And so we need to be at the forefront of all these conversations, and they do impact your marriage, you know? So it's just important to be aware and open to this stuff. We weren't really talking about this 5 years ago before I like to think I broke the ice, and there's been a lot more conversations around this, thank God, but we got a way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you for breaking the ice. Much appreciated. And I want to address like what happens on a global level when women make more money. Can you speak to that? Because I think this is so important. And I think this is something, I think there are people who, because of social conditioning, there are women who believe that women wanting to make more money is just like a symptom of greed.
And so what happens on a global level when women make more money?
The world becomes a better place.
Right. Exactly. And
it just does.
And how?
It just does. And I always just have, I have this one great piece of data in the back of my pocket that comes from, I believe, the Center of Philanthropy. It's the Center for Philanthropy at the University of Indiana, basically that women are more charitable than men across all income levels as a percentage of income. So whether you make $20,000 a year, $2 million a year, if you are a woman, on average, your contributions towards charity percentage-wise are greater than men in that same income bracket. So I look at that as a testament to the generosity and the give back of women that we all know is true. But now here it is in this sort of, you know, this study, this huge study that looks at it from the point of view of charitable giving. And I think that for me, I did hit a wall in my mid-30s, a financial wall where in my mind, I was like, why do I need to earn more? I'm good. I was ready to sort of just tread water a little bit and not push myself to earn more, because I think a part of me did also feel like, well, what are people going to think? You know, are they going to think that I have, my priorities are effed up, that I, you know, and I have kids now, don't I want to spend more time with my kids? People also think that making more money means disappearing, you know, from your family. That's not actually what has to happen. You can get smarter about how you make money. So I decided to re-engineer the way that I work so that I would work smarter to earn actually more money. And I allowed myself to do that. I gave myself permission to do that because I said, you know what, even if my family is cool with the income that I'm bringing in now, think about all the other people I can support and the things that I can do to contribute to the world when more money is in my hands.
Yes. Yes. Have you read, I might've asked you this in our conversation on your show, have you read Moment of Lift by Melinda Gates?
No, I haven't, but I've heard of it.
It is so, so good. One of the things she talks about is global implications of women in the economy. And so to your point around when women have more money, we give more to charitable causes. And this isn't just like the local food bank. Like, we build schools in other countries so that there are more women educated globally, which is completely changes entire cultures and the structure, the economic and government structures of entire countries. And so, yeah, I mean, it's such a big deal. So I love that you caught yourself thinking like, I don't need to make more. And then you're like, oh, wait, hold on. There's still global poverty.
100%. I just think that it can never hurt. If you're mission-based, if your mission is to, you know, make the world a better place, whether that's your family's world, your neighbor's world, your world at large, there's so many opportunities to leave a financial legacy too. You know, I want to make sure that I don't want to make so much money that my kids never have to work and all that. That's not why. It's more about, again, going back to what I said earlier, right? I want to carry the torch that my parents lit when they came here and they built a life for us. I want to be able to then also care, you know, give that torch to my kids and have generational wealth, because why else am I working so hard?
Right, right. So you talk about becoming a mom and doubling your income, which I loved, because when I was pregnant, my financial planner and my accountant both were like, well, now that you're going to make less money. And I was like, oh, wait, what? Like, hashtag watch me, like,
yeah,
make more money while pregnant and in the first year that my child is born. And I did. I was like, oh, my most successful year ever. Thank you. And so I'm curious, how did you do that? Because I think there's absolutely, we have this idea that we always have to add more hours if we want to make more money, which is not necessarily true, or that motherhood, like, we have to pick, well, I could have babies or I could make more money. Which one am I going to do? So how is it possible for you to become a mom and double your income?
Yeah, I wrote this article for money.com. I thought it was just ironic, but also, you know, I wanted to give myself credit and also teach other parents how to take more ownership of their careers in a time when they feel like they have lost all control over anything and everything. You're not sleeping, all the things. And so I want to first state that I did have my kids starting in my mid-30s. And I was at a time, I almost planned it that way because I knew that I needed to be more established in my career so that I could call more shots. I think there are benefits to having kids younger, for sure. You have more energy. I mean, sometimes I really wish that I was a younger mom, but I'm fine with it, especially fine with it because I felt like I was able to plan my family. I was able to afford the family that I wanted. And also, again, be at a place in my career where I had a little bit more seniority. And I've been self-employed. I had been self-employed about 5 years when I had my first son, and then about 7-8 years when I had my daughter. And I've been working for myself for about 10 years. And I feel like a few things happened when I became a mom too that allowed me to earn more. One was creating boundaries. 100%, you have to now create boundaries. It's not because you want to be mean. It's just because there are only so many hours in the day, and now you're taking care of another human's life and also work simultaneously. So you cannot do it all. And if you want to have a very full life, it involves a team, right? You got to outsource help, part-time, full-time, 1 hour a week, whatever you can afford. But I really encourage that, like really outsourcing a little bit some of the busy work or the childcare so that you can tend to yourself, your self-care, and your career care. But I would say no to things. Like, I cannot speak at your event for free, as much as I believe in what you're doing. But I need to provide for my family. I only have so many hours in the day. And if I'm going to say yes to this not paying opportunity, and then another opportunity might come up that is paid, you know, I'm already committed to this. So I've now, you know, lost money. So I got really unapologetic about turning down unpaid opportunities. Not something I would have done easily in my 20s. I'll tell you that much, right? In my 20s, it was all about saying yes, because I knew that it was going to pay off, where I would get to a point in my career and in life as a mom where I could afford to say no. I was now affording myself this option, and I was really grateful for that. I also started to ask for more money, you know, and it wasn't necessarily because I was a mom now, but because maybe I was just like a lot more straightforward with everything, you know, like you just don't beat around the bush when you have kids.
Yeah. Yes. So you don't have the time or the energy. You're like, I don't have the time to be super like gracious and polite all the time. This is what I need.
Yeah. I also got super productive because I knew what my limits were, as opposed to when I didn't have kids, I could sit up all night and, like, you know, file a story and watch a Netflix special at the same time. In this case, you know, my nights were not mine anymore because I'm feeding and I'm up. So the daytime is really an opportunity to get stuff done. I did hire an assistant for a period of time, and she helped to really get me reacclimated to work life. And also, she gave me the capacity to like think big as opposed to be in the weeds of the business at a time when I was still in a very fast growth phase of my career. Think about it, a lot of women have their kids around the years when we're about to make peak earnings. Peak earnings is for women is around 39 or maybe 40 years old. And a lot of women, you know, at least in New York City, women don't start to have kids until mid-30s, late-30s. My gynecologist said her average client is 38, patient is 38. And so think about that. Think about having your kid and then maybe not working for a few years, and you've missed out on those earnings, and then you have to make up for it in your 40s, and it's a little bit more difficult because you've been out of the workforce. So finding a way to just kind of keep your foot in the door a little bit, even when you, I'm saying, like, of course, after your maternity leave, it's so important. And so I said no, I asked for more money, I became super productive, but I also timed it, I think, in a way that I was in a place in my career where I could call more shots and I could afford saying no to things.
Yeah, that's all super helpful. And I absolutely agree with all of it in terms of, and I even noticed this summer, I joke about our summer of, my motto for the summer was to embrace adventure over chaos, because it was the first summer I didn't have full-time childcare, and it was really hard. But it also made me realize, similar to when my son was a newborn, how productive I could be in really short windows of time if I had to be, and how I could still, like, I could do a launch from my mom's house, like between the hours of 6 and 8 a.m. and then go to the pool all day. And not ideal. I'm not saying it's ideal, but it was totally doable. And I was able to really juggle two different things simultaneously this summer because I was like, time management and prioritization all the way. And that it takes some planning, but yeah, it's absolutely possible and doable. So I want to know, in what ways you're currently showing up as a shameless mom.
Oh my gosh. So on Instagram recently, I don't know if you guys have been seeing these like bento boxes for kids.
Yeah. I'm laughing because I just did an ad for one. So now I'm dying to hear
what
you're going to
say. I bought all the bento boxes because I was guilted into, you know, creating these artfully designed lunches for my kid. And it's a crock of crap. And I just have this like very simple box now for his lunch that's got three compartments. I have a boy and he literally pack him like three sandwiches, crusts off, because he eats all of it and he comes home starving. So I can't feed him enough. And I can't give him two blueberries and then three pieces of carrots and then four, straws of hay. Like, I don't know what's going into these bento boxes, but they're infiltrating my Instagram feed. I finally decided to be a little shameless in my opinions of these bento box creations and started posting them on my social media, and people were really appreciating them. And I was like pointing out the kind of like the idiocy of like the packing, and again, not to shame moms, but I was being shameless in my pursuit of pointing out some of the ludicrousy of these bento boxes. And I think that sometimes, I mean, I was a victim of it too. I went out and like got all these boxes from Bed Bath and Beyond and none of them worked for me. So all this to say that I think now I'm going to start an Instagram feed that is points out all of the sort of like overparenting, laughable overparenting quirks that we all are guilty of, but let's just like have a good laugh about it and not take ourselves so seriously.
Right. Yes. So I want everyone to go follow you on Instagram because you have such a great mix of things that are absolutely hilarious, like the example you just gave, and then also like high value tips around money and everything that you do professionally. So such a great combination. Where can people follow you on Instagram and find you in all the other places?
Thank you so much. You're so generous. So the Instagram feed is at Farnoosh Tarabi. It's my first and last name. And my book is called When She Makes More. And my podcast, which you graced not too long ago, everybody should check out that episode, is called So Money with Farnoosh Tarabi.
Remind me how often your show is up. You have lots of episodes.
It's three a week.
Three a week. Okay.
Oh, and this is really important for everybody. If you have a financial question that you want me to help you navigate, every Friday I do an Ask Farnoosh segment, and those questions are all crowdsourced. So send me a question on Instagram, direct message me there, or you can go to my podcast website at somoneypodcast.com and click on Ask Farnoosh and submit your question there. I think I try to answer almost every question, if not on the show or just like, you know, I write back. So definitely use those tools if you have a question for me.
I love it. Farnoosh, thank you for being here. I love it that you showed up shamelessly. We dove right into the controversy and we covered a ton today that was just so, so valuable. So thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And I know our listeners got a lot out of this conversation.
Thank you, Sarah. And thank you to all for listening.
Thank you so much for joining me in the Shameless Mom Academy today. I really, really appreciate you being here, and I hope you learned something new. As always, this conversation will be continued over in our free private Facebook group. You can join that group by going to shamelessmom.com/Facebook to connect with other shameless moms just like you. Additionally, if this is your first time listening to the show, know that we are here every Monday and Wednesday with a brand new episode. So make sure you subscribe. Go to whatever podcast app you use and subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. You can do that directly if you go to shamelessmom.com/review. That will put you in Apple Podcasts, where you can click on the subscribe button, and you can also leave a review. If you scroll down a little bit, you can leave a 5-star review. You can write a few sentences letting me know what you thought about the show. If you let me know how the show has impacted you in becoming a more shameless mom, you might be nominated to be Shameless Mom of the Week. Also, please share this episode. My goal is to help more mamas be more shameless every damn day. So please do share this episode. You can take a screenshot of the episode on your phone and then share it out on social media. Tag me at the Shameless Mom Academy on Facebook or Instagram. I'm quick to reply and eager to send you Facebook love and love to be connected to all of you. So again, thank you for being here. I can't wait to be back here again with you in just a couple days. And until then, no matter what you do today, make sure you do it shamelessly.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of there, life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking.